Dave from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hello, Darren Patterson.
Hello, welcome sir. Back. Thank you. Welcome back. What do you mean? We didn't take a break.
I don't know. It feels like we haven't done this in a while, although it's only been a week, as per usual.
Yeah, and we put out three episodes where we've had amazing guests. But now this is just you and me, the original recipe.
That's true.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
Yeah.
Just the two of us. You and I.
You and I.
You and I. How you been, dude? It's end of August, end of summer.
Summer always just flies by. It's summer never lasts nearly as long as I'd like it to. We need at least 4 months for summer, I think.
Summer loving, having a blast. It just goes so quickly. I didn't even get to go to the beach this summer. Well, what a bummer.
Yeah, I haven't gone to the beach. I haven't gone swimming or anything.
I guess you could go to the beach when it's not summer, but then, maybe better now that I think about it because no one's there.
You could do the whole Chris Christie way to go to the beach, lawn chairs out and just sit there on this deserted closed beach.
That's the life. Just slather down your gut with suntan oil and just roast in the sun like a hog.
Our former governor, ladies and gentlemen, our former governor.
Politics.
Yeah.
You gotta love him.
Anyway, we're back this week. We're doing an episode and a movie that we've been looking forward to doing for a while. And, we didn't think we would get to do this movie. This is kind of fun. We're doing Coyote versus Acme. And, wow, the backstory on this one. It might be more dramatic than what's on the screen, you know?
Yeah. So Coyote versus Acme came out a week ago, 2026. Uh-huh. Directed by David Green, who directed movies Earth to Echo and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. Okay. Written by Sammy Birch, who wrote these two movies I'm not familiar with, Late Fame and May December. Story by Sammy Birch, Jeremy Slater, who did Mortal Kombat 2. And James Gunn had a hand in this, and he also produced this movie as well.
And it's actually based, oddly enough, on a New Yorker article from 1990, all the way back in 1990, by an Ian Frazier called Coyote versus Acme, which was just in the form of a legal filing about how the Coyote was suing the Acme company for negligence and wanted compensation for his personal injuries and his loss of income and all that. Ooh. And that was just sort of the premise of this movie.
Fun little fact, this guy Ian Frazier who wrote this, he was actually at a screening for this movie in Montclair, New Jersey, and he did a little Q&A afterwards. By the time I found out about it, it was already sold out, but I was like, god damn,
all the coolest stuff happens in Montclair, man.
Yeah, all the cool stuff happens.
Which theater was that at? Was that at
The Claridge, the one on Bloomfield.
Yeah, that's where I figured. That's where all the cool stuff goes down.
Yeah. Cool stuff happens in New Jersey, people.
Yeah, that's Jersey people, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
You know what's up.
The Claridge gets all the cool stuff.
It really does. It's hip.
It's like this small theater, but they get some indie things too. And
I thought it used to be mostly indie films, but then I feel like after COVID happened and all the theaters were closed, and then they started getting more mainstream.
Yeah, now it's more of a mix.
You can still see your, pretentious art house flicks in there, but then you could also see, Ninja Turtles and shit like that.
Right.
Yeah. Fun times.
Anyway, that's really cool. I wish I could have seen that.
Maybe we'll reach out to him. Maybe we can get him on a podcast. Who knows?
Oh, that'd be neat. That'd be nifty. Mm-hmm. It ends up becoming this blockbuster movie with SNL alum Will Forte, John Cena, and it's sort of a hybrid live action animated thing, sort of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And Oh, it was so, I gotta tell you, it was so refreshing to see like hand-drawn animation in this movie. Or if they were doing like 3D stuff, they made it look like hand-drawn animation, like 2D animation. It was just so fresh. Because like, I don't know about you, but like the trailers I watched beforehand were mostly like 3D animated movies, and most of them looked like crap.
Yeah.
It's so like there was a trailer for a Tom and Jerry movie, and I was like, oh, that looks like trash.
Yeah, I guess it's this thing where one studio figures out, oh, all the animation is 3D cartoon and graphic animated. So let's all do that, and they just kind of did away with hand drawn. And
yeah, it gets very samey. I don't know if it's just, you know, at first I was thinking like, oh, that's just kind of the trendy way, but no, it's really most places are doing animated films only that way, which I just think is a shame. I'm a big fan of traditional hand-drawn animation.
And no, I am too. Same. I just love the artistry of it. And I don't know. I hope somehow we can persevere and keep going, even though we're in this world where everybody just is giving all the jobs to robots and programs and just have the computer do it. And
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like a little bit of the soul and the spirit kind of dies when you do something like that.
And, you know, I mean, not that you can't make a classic animated film with, you know, using computer animation. I mean, there are great animated films that way too. I just want to see all types of animated films.
Yeah.
And just like, honestly, I was watching so many trailers for like what looked like mediocre to awful 3D animated films. I was like in a bit of a mood at the beginning because it was just like, these are just too many of these fucking things. But then Coyote versus Acme started and it got me like right from the jump. I mean, like right from the get-go, like they put on the screen based on a true story and that got a nice laugh from the audience. And, you know, from right there, I was like all in. I really love this movie, man.
No, this movie is great. I mean, I really liked it too. I mean, it's a interesting mix.
I said loved.
Oh wow. Okay.
So I liked it more than you.
I guess you're a better man than I.
This is what I'm saying. This is my point. If you have a takeaway from the podcast this week, just remember I am better than Darren.
Yes, John Trumbull, greater than sign Darren right. Patterson.
Yes. Right. Right.
That's the math.
Exactly. Yeah. That's math checks out. Yeah. Math checks out. Yeah. Carry the one. And
yep.
Yes. Yeah. I am objectively better.
Right. So, the premise of this film is basically pretty straightforward. It's like you said, it's like the Coyote versus Acme, where we kind of open. I mean, there's like a little bit of a scene before we get to the Coyote where it shows the scientist, Peter Lorre, who, of course, looks like the famous actor Peter Lorre,
right, and from Casablanca and the Maltese Falcon and M and so many classic films. Yeah,
right. And like he makes a discovery while he's working for Acme, and he realizes that he knows too much. So he tries to make a break for it, but one of the workers drops a dime on him, makes a call, like a little turtle, picks up the phone, and then suddenly he's has to run out. Of Acme, like getting chased down by the guards, use some dehydrated boulders to get out, but then they capture him outside, and they force him in down this this hole that they've created. Like,
yeah,
and you know, and then he has to say, "Well, someday the truth will come out," and then he goes down in the hole and he's trapped and disappears, never to be seen again. So it gets
and this pre-title sequence is from 1992. Which, oh my God, it's kind of depressing to me to realize like, oh yeah, that's like 34 years ago. Holy cow!
Yeah, wow. Time flies, people.
I was in college; the whole world was ahead of me, and now it's like 34 years ago. What the hell? Where did it all go, Darren?
I don't know.
Where did it all go wrong?
I don't know. Yo no sé.
I don't know. But anyway, so we fast forward 30 years, And we get Wile E. Coyote, and he's, you know, it's a typical, he's chasing after the Roadrunner in the desert, in the New Mexico desert.
And of course, never succeeding, using all Acme products.
Got these rocket skates and,
magnetic gloves that don't work because he feeds the Roadrunner magnetic like pellet seeds and
ball bearings.
And then he goes home to his cave defeated, just like filing cabinets upon filing cabinets of just all these blueprints and plans that failed and never worked. And he has all these Acme products. It's like he's like a hoarder. He has all these products stacked up in his cave.
Yeah. And it's just like literally decades and decades worth of Acme products. Because, I mean, think of all the Roadrunner cartoons you've seen. And he goes through probably at least three or four Acme products per cartoon. And you add that up over several decades. It's several dozens, if not hundreds, of Acme products.
Right.
And he's kind of cleaning up after that. And then he sees a television ad from the firm of Avery Jones and Maltese, named after classic animation directors.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. Tex Avery, Chuck Jones, and I'd have to look up Maltese's first name. He's not quite as well known.
The Maltese Falcon.
Yes, the Maltese Falcon. No, it's Michael Maltese. That's it. So, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, and he's and it's Will Forte as
Kevin Avery.
Kevin Avery, who's like, I guess, our lead character.
And yeah, I would
he's
say
giving
so.
Like these unusually specific things. And he's like, you know, have you tried to like capture a Roadrunner? And, you know, you used an explosive, but it blew up before you were expecting it to. And then you turned to ash. And it's just, it's so funny. It's so funny. The script on this movie is so good.
It's very good, yeah. And, you know, then you see the law firm Avery Jones and Maltese. I think at one point Jones says, oh, we got 2-for-1 Tuesdays.
Yeah, and they specialize in cartoon violence cases involving Acme products. But what his deal is, he just does like these quick, small settlements. So like, you know, if somebody has a complaint, he'll settle for like $100, $200, $300. You know, he's just pleading everything out, and that's kind of how he makes his living. So.
Right. So then Coyote goes to his law firm in Albuquerque. We see it's in this like it looks very Better Call Saul.
It really is because he's like in a strip mall, and it looks like the Better Call Saul offices. He doesn't have the inflatable guy
at
front that he got from the Kettlemans, but
that's why they're not doing better business.
Yeah, it's
need your wacky arm man.
Yeah. And by the way, the coyote in this movie, he has no dialogue. He doesn't talk, just like in the classic Roadrunner cartoons. He will just like occasionally hold up a sign saying something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised they went that way because like the coyote, I remember him talking in a few cartoons. Like he has like a almost like a Kelsey Grammer Sideshow Bob type of voice. Like, you know,
he does, but not in the Roadrunner cartoons because the Roadrunner cartoons, like one of the rules was that the only dialogue would be the Roadrunner going meep meep. And the coyote would never talk. It was all just.
All right, John, here's another question for you.
Yeah, go for it.
Is it meep meep or beep beep?
There seems to be some debate about this now. Like the movie goes with beep beep, but from what I understand, the classic thing is meep meep. So
controversy.
And it sounds to my ear like meep meep. So I am hashtag team meep meep. I'm going to draw a line in the sand. Yeah.
And correct answer.
And Anvil can fall on top of me.
Cool. And I will cross that line with you in that line of sand, and the piano will fall on top of me.
Yeah. So you're a meep meep guy too, right?
He's clearly saying meep. It's meep meep.
Yeah.
Enough of this beep beep baloney.
Yeah. That would be like my one minor criticism of the movie is that it should be meep meep instead of beep beep. I don't get why they went with beep beep, but
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, the coyote meets up with Kevin, and Kevin, of course, mm-hmm. wants to settle quickly for like $300. You know, he likes quick, easy cases. He doesn't like to take it to court. He doesn't like to fight. So, but the coyote wants to go to court. So, unbeknownst to Kevin, he shoved all of the mountain of evidence he has throughout the amassed throughout the years into a evidence box.
Because he doesn't want to just sue over the latest thing with the rocket skates. He wants to sue over every faulty Acme product there is. And he takes out his little knapsack thing. And it's just like a comical amount of products.
A loony amount, one might say.
A loony. It is a loony tune. Yeah.
Absolutely. So then... the evidence box goes to Acme, gets into mm-hmm. the hands of the head attorney over at Acme, Buddy Crane, played by John Cena.
Right. Because Kevin, he wants to just, you know, settle like he usually does, but his niece and his new intern, Paige, played by Laura Condor, she's, like, eager to, like, take them to court. And Kevin tells like one of his staffers, he's like, "Oh, just catalog this." And the staffer like catalogs every piece of Acme equipment that the coyote brought. So it's like everything, like dozens upon dozens of items. And so it becomes this huge suit. And Kevin is like, "Wait, what? No, we were just supposed to, you know, do this one thing." And yeah, so it becomes a big thing. And that's how Buddy Crane, John Cena's character, gets involved.
Exactly. So then Kevin and the coyote have to go to Acme to, you know, talk to Buddy about this, you know, possible lawsuit. I did like how they basically made Acme into this like big, huge, all omnipresent corporation, mm-hmm. very much like a Amazon or a Meta or mm-hmm. if you're a fan of The Boys, a Vault Industries. Mm-hmm. I did like how when they went to the Acme headquarters, there was like a voice over the loudspeaker saying something like, "Acme, a company built on family values that values its family of companies."
Yeah. And we see at one point, we see like some sort of history of Acme, and we learn that they started out like manufacturing anvils. So there's an anvil in the A for the Acme logo. It was very clever because they gave it kind of this, you know, this sort of fake history. I mean, the cartoons never really get into. Acme is just this all-purpose corporation that the coyote orders his equipment from. And they kind of explain that they have, like, a monopoly on all this. So, you know, the coyote can't really order from anywhere else.
Yeah, they're putting in, like, some commentary here. There are themes at play, if you're really
paying attention. It really is, and it's... And, you know, for a movie that ended up getting delayed for 3 years because of stupid corporate shenanigans, it is incredibly topical.
So topical!
I mean, it really is kind of perfect that it came out at this moment in time. I mean, I hate that the filmmakers had to go through all that grief, of course, but...
Yeah.
It is wild. Because, you know, we live in a time of, like, corporations sort of running rampant. Doing all sorts of grossly irresponsible things. And here we have this very funny movie about corporations running rampant and doing all sorts of grossly irresponsible things.
Yeah, like, I think at one point there was a scene where Buddy Crane was on the phone with, like, the governor or something like that, and mm-hmm. him joking with him about how they make the laws, actually. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. All right. Corporations and government overreach are... I did not expect that in a Looney Tunes movie like this.
And as far as I know, they didn't make any sort of changes to the movie, you know, before the recent release or anything. I think this is exactly the movie that was done and finished back in 2023. Should we get into the history of that?
Yeah, let's do it now, because the history in this is bananas.
It really is. So they did this movie... You know, as we said, it was like originally based on this New York Times or this New Yorker article, you know, funny article. They develop it from there. They make a movie. They complete a movie. And then Warner Brothers is just like, no, we're not going to release this. We're going to do a tax write-off instead.
Jesus.
Wow. And yeah. And
insane. That's such an insult to everybody that, you know,
yeah,
spent all their time and energy and effort on this film. Cause
and I could maybe sort of get it if it was like a disappointing film or it wasn't, you know, up to whatever standard they wanted, but it's a really good film. It's excellent.
Yeah. I think on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at like 95 right now.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's getting so many good reviews.
The reviews have been great. The word of mouth has been great. I've seen so many people on my socials just saying like, oh, it's terrific. Go see it. You know, go watch it. Go stick it to the man. Go stick it to David Zaslav, who's a fucking idiot, you know, but,
yeah,
you know, he just was like, oh yeah, we're just going to take a tax loss of $30 million. And they did this with a couple other films too. There was a Batgirl movie,
yeah,
that was shot and nearly completed. I think it was still in post-production. They wrote that off. There, yeah, was a movie, a Scooby-Doo movie called Scoob Holiday Haunt. But both of those were in post-production. But Coyote versus Acme was complete. They had a little screening like a week after the movie was canceled. And they I think they referred to it as like a funeral screening.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bummer because, I mean, everybody who, you know, kind of studies up on, you know, entertainment news and whatnot knows that Warner Brothers is not in the best place financially these days.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, there's this whole Warner's Paramount merger that they're still trying to make happen, which, yuck, you know, sounds like it will be a horrible thing for lots of reasons.
Yes, horrors abound.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows if that's going to end up happening or not. I mean, I don't know, but.
But, yeah, I mean, it's such a bummer because, like, so many people worked on this thing and, mm-hmm, you know, just spent all their time and effort on it. And for Warner Brothers to be like, no, nah, we're not going to release it. It's such a bummer because,
yeah,
like, all those people, they can't even, like, put this on their resume really anymore. They can't be like, oh, yeah, I worked on this film that no one's ever going to see.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. And I think we're also, because, like, we live in this world now because everybody just throws all these TV shows and movies onto the streaming, so art, mm-hmm, gets kind of watered down and the importance of it just doesn't get the love it should.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, it just seems like more and more people are treating movies and things like this as just straight up products and commodities,
yeah,
rather than
that's it, exactly. Yeah, they don't see it as any sort of artistic endeavor or,
no,
entertainment. It is just like numbers on a spreadsheet or just, you know, a product or, you know, a widget in your catalog.
I know we probably sound like old man screaming at clouds right now, but I do think there's some validity to what we're saying here.
I think so. And it's just enraging that they think they can do this, man. And I love that they, you know, that there was a genuine protest that arose out of this. And people were like, no, we want to see this movie. You should release it. This is like a dumb move. And eventually, I think it got, partly because of the protest, they were shopping it around to other studios and distributors to release it. And finally, there was this company called Catch-Up Entertainment that stepped,
right,
up, and they were able to get it done. And I think we're really simplifying the story, but, you know, I'm not going to pretend I understand all the ins and outs of this, but.
Yeah, we're not businessmen here, folks.
We are not. That is why we earn, nothing for this podcast.
Wait, what? Have you not? You've been getting nothing too?
My checks have not been clearing, no.
Okay. I get a check. It's like, oh, it's all zeros. What?
Yeah.
Why did I get a check?
Negative numbers. What? I owe them money. What the?
What the, huh, now? Preposterous.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that, and I'd forgotten that this was like a 3-year long process, that this went down back in November of 2023. So nearly 3 years later, it's all shaken out and they've released it now. And, like, as soon as the trailer hit, I was just like, this looks so good. This looks so funny.
Yeah.
Why would they throw this away? It just makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, part of me, I will admit, I was a little concerned when mm-hmm. I saw the trailer. Because when it comes to Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes movies and live action, the track record isn't the best. I mean, we have Looney Tunes Back in Action and
Space Jam.
I thought this I hope this isn't another Space Jam. And I
we watched Space Jam for the podcast a few years ago, and I didn't watch it when I was a kid. Did you watch it when it was first out? I'm forgetting.
No, I think when I saw it for the podcast, that was the first time I think I ever saw it.
Yeah, it was the first time through for both of us, and that movie is not good, folks.
No.
You may have nostalgic affection for it. Maybe you had a crush on Lola Bunny, whatever. I'm not judging. Well, yes. I'm judging a little bit. But
hey, Lola, she can get it. We all know it.
But that movie, not good. Not good. I haven't seen Space Jam 2. I can't imagine that was any better. I know Looney Tunes Back in Action has its problems. So it was so refreshing to see this. This was so fun and so creative, and the characters were the characters I remembered as a kid. And I like that they weren't trying to reinvent the wheel, you know? They weren't let's stick in this new hip character. Let's do a Tiny Toons thing. Let's put Lola Bunny in there. I was just like, no, just give us Looney Tunes characters. And that's all you need, man.
Yeah, they didn't try to modern it up or just use Gen Z slang or anything like that.
It's got to be a musical like the Disney animated films. And it's like, no, F that noise.
How can we put in some, can Porky Pig be on TikTok? Can we put that in there? No.
So why doesn't Daffy Duck have an OnlyFans?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. only Finns. What? No, that's
only Finns. There you go.
There
you go.
Hey, we did it. But yeah, no, it's just good old fashioned Looney Tunes humor. The movie's PG, so there's no cursing or mm-hmm. nothing untoward in it. You can bring your kids to this. This is kid friendly.
There are a few jokes that I think will hit adults in a different way than the kids.
Yeah,
and that's fine.
That's fine.
Because honestly, the Looney Tunes characters were always at least as much for adults as they were for kids.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I remember a bunch of Looney Tunes, like you said, where they had the Peter Lorre character, or mm-hmm. they'd have Humphrey Bogart in an episode.
Yeah, he's baby wants roast rabbit stew, and then Bugs Bunny finds out that it's Lauren Bacall, and he's like, oh yeah, let me get into a pot right now. Woo woo,
wolf whistle. Hubba hubba.
Because Lauren Bacall can get it.
Hey now. Yeah, as a kid, I was like, I don't know who these people are, but this is funny.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there are jokes about Peter Lorre or Carmen Miranda or whatever. Because these played before features. You know, this was back in the day, you'd go to the movies and you'd see a newsreel, you'd see some trailers, you'd see a cartoon, you'd, it'd be a whole afternoon. You'd make a day of it.
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
It was so much better back then.
There was a better time.
30 years before we were born, it was better. Yeah. That's the way it was, and we liked it.
We
loved it.
Hallelujah. I don't like the way things are now. I like the way they used to be.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that this movie actually came out and came to pass, and it didn't get compromised or watered down, and it's... And it has a point. It has this great anti-corporate message.
Yeah, as they go to trial, we see they've been trying to gather up evidence, but they don't have anything. And then we see Luis Guzman popping in as a judge. And there's a bunch of intrigue here. Kevin gets a call from an anonymous tip who sounds an awful lot like Bugs Bunny.
I saw somebody say one of the best jokes in the movie is Kevin gets this anonymous phone call, and it starts out with what's up, doc, and he's like, who is this? Because this just exists in a world where humans and toons coexist.
Yeah, very
and
Roger Rabbit.
It's never questioned. It's never oh my god, you're real. Nobody's it's just oh yeah, this coyote came in to hire my firm, and And the cartoons do cartoon things. You know, like at one point, Wile E. Coyote paints a tunnel on the side of a wall, and then they can all walk inside that tunnel.
Yeah.
And they're using their phones to, like, light their way.
By the way, all the phones have the Acme logo on them.
Yeah, yeah.
Acme is everywhere.
And like, at one point, and well, you know, and of course, in the tunnel, there is, of course, an oncoming train that they have to outrun. And they do that, and it crashes through the wall of their law office. So the wall of the law office is in just shambles. There's just debris. And in the background of this one scene, you can see the Wile E. Coyote rebuilding the wall.
Oh, yeah.
As like Will Forte's having dialogue in the front. And he's just like diligently putting the wall back together, and then it like all falls apart again. I loved it. I loved the fun tune stuff going on around the edges and stuff.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, and like there's also like a lot of kind of heart to it and some character mm-hmm. building to it, because like we see Will Forte's character, Kevin, he's kind of like, he's somebody who knows his place. He's like kind of, oh yeah, I'm just like a low-level lawyer, and I don't want to aspire to be anything bigger or better than that. But it's like the coyote who's like pushing him to like, no, take this. Well, he's not talking, but he said, you know, take this to court and like, you know, take down the corporation. But then even that gets flipped on his head when Kevin finds out that the reason the coyote wants to go to court is because mm-hmm. this whole lawsuit is a huge elaborate scheme to get the Roadrunner in to testify. And that's when the coyote will capture him and eat him.
Yeah, because they determine that the Roadrunner is the one witness to all the damage that the Acme products have done to the coyote over the years. So they're like the Roadrunner is the only one we can call. And there's like a fun sequence where they're trying to like serve a summons to the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
To get him as a witness. And it's, you know, and it plays like a typical coyote type scheme, because, you know, the Roadrunner just like runs off. And again, very funny, very funny stuff.
Yeah. I did get a kick out of, because we also see like as they're Paige and Kevin are trying to gather evidence, talk to people, they're getting threats. That people are dropping boulders on their cars.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That was a good running gag. Yeah. Kevin loses all these cars.
Yeah. All his cars just go kablowy.
And there's like, you know, a boulder on one, there's a piano on another. And
Yeah.
It's great.
And we also see that Tweety Bird is working for Acme, spying on them with some other hired goon. And I did like when Tweety and Buddy meet up in the desert to, you know, to talk. And
mm-hmm.
Buddy says, like, all right, tell me what you saw. And, you know, of course, Tweety says, I taught. And Buddy's like, I don't pay you to talk. I pay you to taw.
Yeah. Now,
what did you teach?
And John Cena, you know, he also has like just the right sort of touch to do this. There's a nice lightness to his performance where you believe that he is a man who interacts with tunes and it makes sense.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, because he's got like a nice, healthy absurdity to him, and he knows just how to play that stuff. And Will Forte's excellent at that sort of thing too. They were just both perfect choices. And the head of the Acme Corporation,
the CEO,
is Foghorn Leghorn.
Good choice, I'd say. Out of all the
good choice, he works well as sort of a villain. I mean, especially because his character was like like a parody of like a radio character, like who was sort of this senator who was like, you know, this loudmouth senator who I think was the radio character is maybe based on a real life senator.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, and you know, it works really well. I really admired how the film found a place to put like most every classic Looney Tunes character, but it never really felt overstuffed. It had like everybody had their place, but it never felt like, oh, we're putting this person in just to jam them into the movie.
Oh, and, interesting.
You know, okay. And it wasn't like, oh, well, we had to have Bugs and Daffy all the way through this. No, like Bugs and Daffy, they come in briefly, they do their bit, and that's that's all you need with them.
Yeah. Porky Pig pops up, and we see Sylvester on the scene. All right, so yeah, Foghorn Leghorn was directly inspired by the character of Senator Claghorn, a blustery Southern politician played by Kenny Del Mar on Fred Allen's popular 1940s radio show.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. So, wow, John, look at you educating the people.
Well, I'm trying to. I mean, God knows I try to.
God only knows what I
towards the end at the big climax of the film, we see Elmer Fudd as a senator.
Yeah, that's
yeah, it goes up to a Senate hearing, and I'm just seeing this, and we have Senator Elmer Fudd, which is just a funny idea in and of itself. But half the end of the movie, I was like, who the hell did Elmer Fudd beat to get in office?
You don't think he has the right credentials needed to be a senator?
I don't know. I don't know. I can't imagine Elmer Fudd running a very successful campaign or a very effective campaign. So, but you know, hey, look at some of the people who are in office these days.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, John, but
maybe that's on brand. Who knows?
That's pretty much on brand.
Voters are dumb.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. Except for you listeners. You guys know what's up.
You guys are awesome, and you're wonderful, and you're smart, and you're sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sexy.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Are you doing something new with your hair? I really like it. It looks great.
Yeah. Look at you, that fat ass.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. I'm doing their hairstyles. You're going right to the fat asses.
Hey, man, the heart wants what it wants.
Okay, I get it. Yeah.
Before they go to the Senate, they're still working on the case with the Judge Trapagrosso, played by Luis Guzman. We see Paige meeting up, going to Granny's house because the missing Dr. Laurie was married to Granny. She has some information and things that Laurie left behind. I like how when she takes Paige down to the hidden laboratory about things he was working on to help Toons, one of the things with an anti-predator spray, and she sprays it on Pepe Le Pew, and he goes away.
One of the best gags in the movie. I mean, because Pepe Le Pew is one of those characters who maybe hasn't aged great because his whole thing is he's trying to force himself on an unwilling woman.
Yeah. Or
you
cat.
Know, some cat who just had the misfortune to walk under a freshly painted fence, and he's like, hey, hot skunk, I'm gonna go get me some.
Yeah. God. Yeah, but yeah, it's those cartoons have not aged.
Well, I mean, I think they're fine if you don't think about the subtext and, you know, but yeah.
That's true. But then Paige finds out Granny's been getting calls from a mysterious deep throat who asks what is up with the doc. And like she gets.
And they also learn about this thing called Project Sisyphus, which figures into it somehow. And, we got to figure out what this is all about. So there's a bit of a mystery to this too.
Yeah, and then it all comes to a head when they Kevin and Paige and the Coyote meet up with Bugs, the Deep Throat, at the Carrot Festival, which they mentioned throughout the thing, and then he basically tells which Carrot Festival. Like,
I love that because like you see like a few commercials for the Carrot Festival early in the film, and you're obviously watching this and they're like, oh well, this is how they're going to bring Bugs in somehow. Yeah. You know, because it's in Albuquerque, and also like Bugs always had that line. I knew I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque.
Dude, I didn't even think of that.
I was thinking of that. I was thinking of nothing but that.
My man.
That and wondering how Elmer Fudd won his Senate race. This is where my mind goes.
He obviously just like paid his way to the top. I think we all know that.
I guess so. I guess so. Yeah.
He wubbed some shoulders.
he showed them some good woven.
Oh boy. So this is where Bugs tells about Project Sisyphus, which is a product testing program that Dr. Laurie headed up that that uses cartoon violence to improve Acme products for humans, and then the program started to drive his tech subjects insane, like it did with Daffy, who was literally in an insane asylum when we see him in this movie.
And Daffy's like painting, like when Will Forte and Paige come to see Daffy at the asylum, he's like, "All right, great, take your pants off," because he thinks he's their model,
right?
And then as they're leaving, Porky Pig comes in. He's like, "Hey, I hear there's a gig for like a pantsless model." Funny.
Hey, money's money. You got to do what you got to
do. So funny.
So funny. So then when Dr. Laurie tried to expose what was happening, the company silenced him. And then Acme started sort of testing their products out in the wild on unsuspecting clients like Wile E. Coyote, because like they found that he was a severe user of it, or high usage user.
Yeah, high usage user. That's what they call him. Yeah, because he's like chronic. You know, because he's just like ordering from them so much and ordering every darn thing. And and they're taking all the data from his failures and learning how to apply that to products for humans.
Which is so pretty wild if you think about it. Yeah. Like, they're using all these people as like test subjects and guinea pigs. And holy shit. I mean, I don't know if corporations are actually doing. I don't want to dip into the conspiracy pool, but
I think it's fair to say that there are some corporations that don't have the best interests of the public at heart.
Cough, cough, Meta. Cough, cough.
Can we say that? Cough, cough, Amazon. Cough, cough. Cough, cough, Warner Brothers. Cough, cough.
Cough, cough, Tesla. Cough, cough.
Cough, cough. Cough.
You were just coughing.
I was just coughing. I have.
I'll just clear my throat.
Of
a cold. But some pretty wild stuff for a cartoon movie. Like
wacky, wild stuff?
Weird, weird, wild stuff. So then we go back to the trial. We see Avery try to talk to the head of Acme's head of PR, which is, of course, the Tasmanian Devil.
Yes.
As you do. And then he asks him about Project Sisyphus. But the Tasmanian Devil is silenced by Acme. He's ejected out of his seat while he's on the witness stand. And then Avery's like, "Oh, my witness has been tampered with." And he's like, "Oh, well, we don't know that. He just ejected on his own volition or something." And because Avery and his firm don't have enough evidence to convict, it's a mistrial, and Acme ends up winning. Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom.
The end.
That's it. That's on a downer.
Surprisingly. Downbeat ending.
It's a real Chinatown.
Yeah, it really did. Forget it, Wile E. It's Chinatown. Forget it, Wile E. It's Acme.
Guys, we're joking. There's more movie. Yeah.
But Kevin ends up revealing this conspiracy to the press. And that's how we end up getting a congressional hearing in Washington, D.C. And Kevin and Wile E., of course, you know, they have their own sort of arc throughout the course of the film. Like, Kevin feels very betrayed when he figures out that the coyote only wants to lure the Roadrunner to the trial so that he can finally capture the Roadrunner. And at one point we see the blueprint plan, and it's like, you know, go to Albuquerque, hire a lawyer, sue Acme, and then it's like, capture Roadrunner, and it's like, cook Roadrunner, and it's like, then Kevin and I eat like kings.
It's such an elaborate plan to eat this damn bird.
But it's kind of, in a weird way, it becomes kind of touching, because like, you know, like Wile E. Coyote is like including Kevin in his plans, and he's like, "This will be a bonding experience," and it's so much funnier because like the coyote never talks.
It is. Yeah, actually, it is. You know what I think about? Yeah, I think it is better that he does. It's a very, like, almost like Harpo Marx or whatever type of thing.
Yeah, well, because they have to get way more creative of how he expresses himself. Like, you know, it's through his facial expressions or him holding up signs. Like, he's having exchanges with Kevin at one point. You know, Kevin's like, well, why don't you just hold up signs all the time to tell us what you're thinking? And the coyote holds up a sign and just says, limited number of signs. I died. That killed me. That was so damn funny.
Limited number of signs.
Yeah. You know, he only has like 3-4 at a time. So funny.
It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
So we have the big court case in front of Congress with Senator Fudd. But before that, Buddy offers Kev $1 million to just drop the case and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And Kev says no. I'm taking you down.
Yeah.
Take your damn dirty Acme money. it's the two of them. I mean, it's, you know, Acme against the little guy. Oh, and also we learned that the other two lawyers in the firm, Jones and Maltese, they call and tell Avery, like, yeah, we actually spent all our money on this case. So we're like flat broke. So if you don't win, we're out of business.
There won't be a firm to come back to.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. It's like, I didn't want to tell you this before, but, you know, thought you should know.
Bye.
Bye.
Go get him.
And the people at the law firm are funny, too. Like, the real deadpan receptionist, she's so funny.
Yeah, that's I forget her name, but I know
I've seen her in other stuff.
Martha Kelly.
Martha Kelly, yeah.
She was just in another movie we talked about, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah,
okay.
She was at the Washington Monument. She's like the tour guide.
Oh, yes. Okay.
She's with them in the elevator. And I know she's also on Euphoria as well.
Yeah. And apparently she was on Baskets.
Yeah.
On FX. So, I mean, she's like one of those, she's, you know, one of those, hey, it's that person.
Yeah.
So,
she's good. She has a nice deadpan serious delivery, so I can see why she gets work. And I know Maltese is Tone Bell, who's like a comic and who appears in a lot of stuff as well. We got the big case, the big showdown. Kevin calls Foghorn Leghorn to the stand, and he gets Foghorn to publicly admit to Project Sissy Fist, but
it's very A Few Good Men. You know?
Very much so.
Did you order the code red? You're goddamn right I did.
It's wild. And then
Foghorn says, I'm going to rip out your eyes and piss in the sockets.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
I may be paraphrasing. Maybe that was A Few Good Men. I may be getting mixed up.
I think it is, John. I think Oh, boy. But then, like, Foghorn argues that cartoons like Wile E. Coyote aren't important enough for anyone to care if they're harmed.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, a lot of stuff here that's like, oh, shit. Like, you know, he says, like, oh, yeah, what's a little pain for the greater good? It's very, like, Gordon Gekko-ish a little bit, the way the scene goes.
Very, very sort of like, you know, Tuskegee experiments, you know?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, and then Elmer Fudd kind of, I think because at one point Kev says, well, you know, my client here, he depends on Acme for his work because, like, they have a monopoly over all of his products. And then Fudd kind of laughs him off saying, oh, your client doesn't work. He's just a coyote in the desert.
And then he just cites, he's like, hey, the previous case of Sylvester versus Tweety proved that being a predator is a legitimate form of work.
And, not that type. The other type of predator.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, just so funny. I love that they just toss that off. Like, in this world, there was a previous lawsuit between Sylvester and Tweety and it proved that being a natural predator was a legitimate occupation. So great.
It's in
so
the books. Great.
Yeah.
So after Foghorn admits, oh, yeah, Project Sisyphus is a thing, but, you know, he's a coyote. No one cares enough about him.
Yeah.
No one even cared enough about him to testify. But wait a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
Someone did care enough to testify. In comes the Roadrunner.
The Roadrunner And he testifies with like Kevin just like asking him yes and no questions. He's like two beeps.
It's me.
Whatever movie. It's like two beeps for no, one beep for yes. Or maybe it was vice versa. I forget. I wasn't taking notes on the theater because I'm a good person.
oh, damn.
Well, you know, I would have had to take the notes on my phone. I'm not going to light up my phone while I'm in the theater.
Okay.
See, By the way, when I was in the theater, I was quick aside.
Oh.
The person who came in and sat next to me, I was very afraid. It looked like for all the world he was going to record the movie on his phone.
Oh, no.
To, like, bootleg it or something. Because, like, he came in with a girl, and they looked like they were dressed up sort of like a cosplay type of thing. And she had, like, this cane thing, which I then realized was, like, this iPhone stand. It looked like they were attaching the iPhone, and I was like, oh, God, this guy is going to record the movie next to me. So
you tackled him.
I was like, I got to decide what I'm going to do.
Here. You were like, no.
Yeah. I was like, do I say something to him? Do I have to try and just quietly tolerate like this lit phone next to me? Do I go out and like rat the guy out to the theater management and maybe get him thrown out? But thankfully, when the movie started, he didn't seem to be doing that. Or if he was, he was being discreet and his screen wasn't lit up. Okay. So anyway, didn't ruin my movie going experience.
Nice. But you almost had to
give me some trying moments there, Darren.
You almost
had to, telling you.
Yeah. You almost had to carry some cinema justice. You have to.
I was like, you know, am I going to have to smack a bitch?
I'm going to have to clothesline this man in this theater, choke him out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, that's how I roll.
Yep, put him in a suplex, from the top rope.
Right, right.
You know, cinema justice.
Cinema justice.
That's right. Not in my theater.
Not today.
Not today. One man had enough.
But anyway, it's so touching when the Roadrunner comes in and testifies. And he testifies that, you know, like, he has seen the coyote injured by Acme products. And then he has, like, and then the Roadrunner holds up some signs. And he's like, I have a question. And he was like, are you coming back, coyote?
Aww.
And it's like, yeah, the Roadrunner, like, he kind of regards the coyote as a friend. He, like, enjoys being chased by the coyote. And
yeah, that was weird. I was like, he's trying to kill and eat you, but he's your friend? Hey.
But it worked in the context of the movie,
it
man.
Does, it does.
It, I mean, I was like, I was getting a little teary-eyed, man.
Aw. Well, look
touch
at you.
Me. Touch me. Oh, by the way, there's also one of the funniest bits in the movie is, I think, the coyote going through the metal detectors for the trial.
Oh yeah.
And he's got this knapsack that has all the Acme products in, and he's like going through and the metal detector keeps going off. And so he's like, each time he's like putting out another Acme product, and then it keeps going and the line is forming behind him. Oh, so funny.
It's pretty
so
good.
Funny.
There's a lot of like legit funny side gags in this thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, you could just, like, do something like this. You don't have to make it hip and modern for the kids.
Yeah.
Like, you could just have, like, a simple little sight gag like this. No cursing or cussing.
And you know, and you might think from what you've heard so far that this sounds like it's all just, like, people in courtrooms. It's not that, because we also had, like, the investigation, and there's some action stuff. There's a great chase sequence. Like about two-thirds of the way into the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. That's really funny. Like some, it's just a great balance of stuff, I think. Yeah.
But, I mean, unfortunately, this comes to a sad ending. But because even after the Roadrunner's testimony, Senator mm-hmm. Fudd decides to, declines to pursue federal charges because Wiley is the sole plaintiff against Acme. So...
Right.
Acme wins yet again.
Yeah.
Son of... I actually was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah.
At this part.
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
But good guys defeated, bad guys win. The end.
The end, yeah. Again.
Forget a coyote, it's Acme Town.
It's Acme Town. But then as you know, Buddy and Foghorn are gloating, Wily just goes ahead and activates the Rube Goldberg-like trap he was going to have the Roadrunner.
He was going to spring on the Roadrunner. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you see like this intricate trap, and it's all stuff that you saw in his hotel room he was working on, like all the things kind of come together to say, oh, he was working on that earlier, and he worked on that earlier, and this is how that worked. It was a nice little sight gag at the end.
I also liked, like, you know, during the trial, when they would reference certain things, and they'd have like clips from some of the classic cartoons.
Mm.
Of like, you know, actual equipment that backfired on him. That was great.
It was good. It's good.
Yeah. So, you know, Foghorn and Buddy, John Cena, are like publicly humiliated, but you know, they still won in court. So what do you call it? A Pyrrhic victory?
Victory
something
lap?
Like that.
But they still won, and you know, so. Kevin and Coyote and Paige have to go back to Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, well, I guess that's it. Like, I guess we don't have a firm anymore, but hold on.
Yeah.
What the huh? Because the firm is now inundated with all these Looney Tunes looking to sue Acme for damages.
Yeah.
They got all these plaintiffs now and all these cases, and everybody wants to. They saw what they did in Congress, and they're like, oh, I want this law firm to represent me because I have problems with Acme as well.
Right.
And then we also see that Bugs Bunny sent them some evidence, a VHS tape of the Sisyphus projects and experiments.
Yeah. Because they did some lab testing too, which was what Peter Lorre, Dr. Lorre, was exposing at the beginning of the film.
Exactly. Once the VHS tape gets out, that gets Foghorn Leghorn and Buddy arrested, and the good guys win.
And Dr. Lorre is freed from his trap, and he's reunited with his wife, Granny, and Tweety. So we have a sort of heartwarming reunion between them. And then Wily goes back to the desert, but he's friends with Kevin and Paige now. And he's like, hey, I'm going to be chasing after the Roadrunner. But they're like, hey, don't be a stranger. And we have, like, you know, title cards saying, like, you know, the coyote never caught the Roadrunner, but he like, visited his friends in Albuquerque whenever he felt really lonely. And, again, so touching. It shouldn't really be this touching, but it really is.
Yeah, I did not expect this from a fucking Looney Tunes movie like this. Like, oh, it touches on all these themes. It has some good commentary about corporations, but it also has some character growth and building and heart.
Pulls and those heartstrings, man. And and this is with a character who, again, not talking through the entire runtime of the film. They don't even do that once. He doesn't even, like, you know, he has a business card that says Wile E. Coyote Super Genius. Because, like, he did talking in other cartoons. Like, when the coyote was going up against Bugs Bunny, he talked in those cartoons.
Right.
And they also had the wolf and the sheepdog cartoons.
That's where I remember hearing him.
Where they would punch in at the beginning of the day.
Morning, Ralph. Yeah.
But there he was playing an actual wolf, and he had like a red nose instead of a black nose. So that's how you could tell he was different.
Totally different.
That and the talking thing.
Yes.
But those were great too. Those were great too. But I think it was just such a great choice to have him not talking in this movie because they got so much mileage out of that. And
But I mean, Coyote versus Acme, great movie. I'm so happy that it's out there and so mad that it almost wasn't out there because this is,
I know,
it's like a creative movie. As like, I mean, it uses characters that we've seen before, but it has like an interesting take. It has something to say. It's a interesting concept. Genuinely funny. You can bring the kids to this.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this movie's got it all.
And got to give a special shout out to the voice actors. One in particular, Eric Bowser. I may be mispronouncing that, but listen to who he voiced. He voiced Bugs Bunny,
ooh,
Charlie Dog, ooh, Daffy Duck, Dr. Laurie, Elmer Fudd, Foghorn Leghorn, Gossamer, the big, you know, red furry thing.
Oh, right.
Porky Pig, Roadrunner, and Tweety. So that's like 10 characters.
That's like half the cat, the animated
yeah.
cats. They got one dude to do
so
all
this
that?
Is, you know, like modern day Mel Blanc there. I mean,
wow.
And he did an incredible job. And then we had Candy Milo as Granny, Witch Hazel, Miss Prissy, and Jim Cummings as the Tasmanian Devil. But
yes.
All of them did such a great job.
Really good. Really good. I mean,
so good.
Yeah.
And,
I mean,
you know, they all sounded like themselves. None of them were like, oh, that sounds kind of off. No, there was none of that. Everybody sounded like they should have. The characterizations were all good. I was just like, yeah, that's. They make it look easy, man.
Yeah, they do. And I think this movie is, I mean, it's not doing, I guess, blockbuster numbers, but it's doing well. It did better than the new, like, Ridley Scott movie that came out this past weekend.
I think it, what did it make, like, something like $25 million this weekend, something like that?
$25, $15, I believe, something like that. But it came in number two behind, like, Spider-Man, the juggernaut.
Because Spider-Man Brand New Day is still doing juggernaut business. And look, that's great. Very entertaining movie as well. You know, I saw it, loved it. I got to go out and see it again before it goes away. But try and see Coyote versus Acme because it's really great.
Yeah, it's something special for sure. Like it's like I said, it's an original idea. It's has genuine laughs in it. Has a message. Yeah. It has something to say. Yeah, like it's worth your time for sure. People go. Go out and catch
yeah,
it. You
really
will not be
it.
Disappointed.
It is so entertaining. And it's, you know, entertaining for adults, kids, all that stuff. Everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go see it. Go see it.
Yeah, go out and bring the kids.
It's so much fun. And you know, and hats off to Ketchup Entertainment for
yes
acquiring this movie, bringing it out, releasing it, getting it to the people.
Bravo.
And there's a nice thing at the end. It's like, you know, thank you for everyone who believed in this film. It's like because of you that it's out. And yeah, and that was really nice.
Very much so. I mean, we put out the word, I don't know, Blue Sky about this film. And I think we got some feedback from our good friend, Manette Moratti, who sent a Reddit thread about all the small heroes who made an effort to show how much they cared about this movie coming to light. First, the movie's crew who posted a video of behind the scenes when it was first scrapped. So you can look at that video on our Blue Sky account. And she also put the Twitter, account of the composer who directed the choir to sing the song inside Abbey Road Studios, of all places.
Nice.
Because, yeah, there's a song in the soundtrack this where there's a choir used. And then she put the Instagram account of the working actor doing a bit that had no impact on the release of this movie, but encapsulated how everyone felt about the movie being treated by Warner Brothers. Interesting. But this movie was a pleasant surprise. I would say this is probably one of my favorite movies of the summer.
Yeah. It's up there. I think it's definitely in my top five movies of the year. Yeah. A lot of fun. You know, this Spider-Man Project Hail Mary was really good if you didn't see that. That was pretty excellent. I can't think of any others right now.
I mean, I've heard
there are other movies I've liked, but
yeah, I mean, I've heard good things about Obsession. I haven't seen it yet, or
haven't seen Obsession. No,
but yeah, no. I mean, I don't know. We're putting the word out there, folks. Go see Coyote versus Acme. Don't take our word for it. Go out and see it for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. I think that's the episode, guys. Right.
I think so. I think we're done. I think we hit this one out of the park, Darren.
Home run. Nothing but nets. Swish.
Yeah. Gorgeous. No notes.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Great.
Yes.
Great stuff.
And it's good. And guys, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. As always, you could follow all of this on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this podcast on our YouTube page, non-reductive.com. Donate to our Patreon. And as always, me, myself, and I, you can follow me on all the socials at that Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N, Credible. Folks, if you're listening to this, when we put it out this week, I am doing my my run-through for my very first special this Thursday, September 3rd, at QED Astoria. Please come out and see me. I'm a nervous wreck about it.
It's Astoria, Queens, New York.
Yes, Astoria, Queens, New York, New York. And yeah, and also tickets still available for the taping of my very first special on October 8th in Newark, New Jersey at the Newark Culture Club. Go get them. And if you can't go to any one of those, I'll be around. I got like two shows happening in Manhattan, New York City. I got two shows in Philly coming up in September. Nice. And I'm also going to be part of the Ha Ha Harvest Comedy Festival in Hoboken and Jersey City.
Look at you!
Yeah, I'm everywhere. Some say I'm doing too much, but
I've always said that about you, Karen. Yes,
it's a whole. I'm gonna just collapse into an exhausted mess by mid October. So
you're just gonna be a bull. Yes. You're just gonna hibernate for like 3 months after this.
So come see me pre-hibernation. You can find out everything I'm doing, my website, DarrenCredible.com. And again, the socials, Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yeah. And you can follow me on the socials at Trumbull Comic. But you know what? Don't do that. Go to DarrenCredible.com.
Hey!
Go follow Darren. Whee! Go support Darren. Go see his shows.
Yay!
Go to his album taping.
Hoorah!
You can meet Darren. You can meet me, too. Yes.
Take
I'll
pictures
be there
with us.
Cheering them on.
Yeah, we'll do autographs, sign things, take pictures, kiss hands, shake babies, all that stuff.
We'll wave to you from across the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do the first part. John will do that second part.
I'm shy. I'm fragile.
He doesn't like to make eye contact.
No. I, you know, like that hibernating thing we were talking about a minute ago, that's me on a regular day.
That's what's up. Okay. So, that's the episode. And should we let them know what we're going to do next week, my friend?
Oh, let's. It's the fall. It's September as this episode's coming out. People are going back to school. We gotta figure out like a cool back to school movie to watch. You know, if there was some movie that was about going to school or, you know, like getting ready to go to school, like going back to school, that starred an SNL alum.
A movie about going back to school.
With an
SNL alum. Back to school.
Oh, back to school.
I know what we could do.
Yeah.
Superbad.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that's, I mean, what else could we have possibly been talking about?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, we were definitely going to talk about Superbad. So we're doing Superbad. Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Seth Rogen, and of course our SNL connection, Mr. Bill Hader.
Bill Hader.
That's how it's pronounced?
Hader, yes.
Hader. Okay.
Yes.
Apologies.
So I'm looking forward to revisiting this. I've always loved this movie, haven't rewatch it in a little bit. It's been a couple of years, I think. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Yeah, I have it on DVD. I remember being a huge fan of it back in the day. So, like, I'm looking forward to revisiting it and seeing how it holds up.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty good, I'm guessing.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. What year was Superbad? This is going to make me feel...
2007.
Holy crap. How is this movie 19 years old? That is wild.
You shouldn't have done that, John. I knew that was a mistake.
That seems wrong, but...
It does. There's...
This is the film debut of Emma Stone.
This is her very first movie?
This was her film debut, according to the Wikipedia page.
I know she did some TV, but I didn't know this was her first film.
Yeah. She did that VH1 Partridge Family reality show thingy.
Right. And I think this is the hair where Judd Apatow convinced her that she should dye her hair red, because I know she's a natural blonde. And that's, you know, that red hair has pretty much stuck with her entire career now at this point.
Yeah. You know,
it was a good note.
She was playing Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was her real. And Birdman, too. That was her real hair color there, too.
I forgot that she was blonde in Birdman.
She's blonde in Birdman.
Yeah. I gotta revisit Birdman. It's been a few years since I've watched the Birdman.
I enjoyed
the Birdman.
I like the Birdman.
I would like to see Birdman again.
It's a good
Birdman again. Yeah.
Birdman again. Yeah.
Birdman again. Birdman again. He's a good guy. Good guy.
Good man.
Got me a good deal on a used car. Birdman again.
Birdman again. Use autos.
Anyway, yeah, that's next week. Super bad. Join us, won't you? So, but until then,
Nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.